This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. Tonight I'm joined by Rajiv Gurung, who is from, a little complicated, from Nepal/Bhutan. I've been trying a long time to get him in the studio for this interview. I'm glad it finally happened today. Welcome, Rajiv. Namaste.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you so much.
My one Nepali word, namaste. Now, you were born in Bhutan, but your background is Nepali, right?
Right.
And we're going to talk about that at length because you were in a wave of refugees that came to St. Louis because of the fact that you were in another country and things got kind of difficult there. So we'll talk about that. But first, let's talk about where these two countries are geographically on the map. I always like to start out with that to set the scene. So let's start with Nepal. Where is Nepal? What countries is it border?
First and foremost, thank you so much, Ron, for inviting me. Namaste. Let's start with Nepal. Nepal is a beautiful country between China and India.
Okay.
South Asian country. Mm-hmm.
And then Bhutan?
Bhutan is a little bit further east from Nepal. Okay. They are not together, but it's also between big country China and India.
Yeah, there's a little piece of India between them, right?
Right. It's India, but mostly people lives there are Nepalese or...
Okay. And I found this interesting. I read that Bhutan is a mostly Buddhist country and Nepal is a mostly Hindu country. Is that right?
Right.
Although I understand that Buddha was born in Nepal.
Nepal.
That's interesting. Do you know why there's not more of a Buddhist presence in Nepal, even because of that's where the origin of the Buddha was?
Before Buddhism, Nepal was also, they had a different religious, they called Bon.
Okay.
But Hinduism is an older religion, so Nepal was Hindu from long time.
Was Buddhism just didn't catch on there or it didn't spread that much? I guess Hindu was something that people were...
No, Hindu was a majority from previous.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
But it's not really big difference on Hinduism and Buddhism.
Really?
Yeah. It's similar.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that if we have time at the end. I didn't know that. Now, I've heard... said that Bhutan is the happiest place in the world. Have you heard that before? It's supposed to be people are the happiest in the world there.
I don't want to get point on...
Maybe
like,
you weren't so happy there. But
I don't want to get too political ways, but Bhutanese people who lives in Bhutan says that Bhutan is the happiest place for us who've been out from a country. It's kind of frustrated to say that it's happiest place, but
okay,
we were born there, so
let's talk about this situation. Your people are called Lo-Champa,
right?
Say so that. Lo-Champa, I'm not saying that right. How do you pronounce it?
No, even me, I cannot pronounce exactly. But Lo-Champa is Lo-Champa. A typical Bhutanese Dukpa. They call Dukpa language.
Okay,
Jonka language. That's what it means for Nepalese.
Oh, that means Nepalese
or
Bhutanese
southern
language.
Southern built up.
Got it. Okay. Can you? I mean, a lot of people. I didn't know about this before. A lot of people probably don't. What is this situation, history, the problem with this population of Lo-Champa people? How they're Nepali people living in, or they were living in Bhutan. How did that come about? Why?
Whatever I heard from my parents or grandparents in 17th century when there was Ramsar in Nepal. Bhutan and Nepal had a treaty, and they took 40 or 47 families to Nepal, to Bhutan from Nepal. They make a brotherhood and sisterhood, and they went there.
When was this?
It should be around 17th century when the Tsar dynasty were there. And then from there, it was smooth. Everything was running fine. They were equally treated as a brotherhood.
They were invited to come there by the Bhutanese king. And I heard that some of the people that were invited were like master craftsmen. People had special skills that maybe worked for the royal court.
Right. But my parents and were from grandparents were from Nepal, but whenever they went to Bhutan, some of our relatives are still in India too. Mm-hmm. They migrated to Sikkim, where between India and Nepal is. Mm-hmm. The place you told, a small place, yeah. India, those are Darjeeling and Sikkim.
So Darjeeling.
I still have some few families over there.
Okay.
So one of my aunt's sister, they moved to Bhutan as finding a better place for...
Now, this was probably in the 20th century, I guess, right? Or 19th? Mm-hmm. So people were continuing to move there, but not necessarily invited by the king, right? They were looking for better life?
They were invited, too.
They were, too. Okay. Yeah. All right. And you said everything was fine for a while until...
Fourth king.
20 or 30 years
fourth
ago.
Fourth king.
Yeah.
Until a fourth king.
Fourth king. Okay. Mm. So how did things change then?
Everything was normal until 89, 90, where most revolution was happened on 90 and 89.
Okay.
Mostly, meanwhile, all southern belt of Bhutan was majority Nepalese.
Okay. So there was an increasing population.
Right, increasing population as well as more educated, skilled people from Nepalese community.
And the whole population of Bhutan is less than a million, right?
It's right, like, right.
What did I see here? 775,000 people.
Right.
Okay, so you represented a sizable minority of the people, and that maybe made some people nervous.
Right. And then so far, like... even in school, they had a Nepalese classes too. They had a Nepalese classes.
Were they different schools or Nepalese classes?
Where majority Nepalese used to be. Okay. Majority Lhotshampas used to be. They have a Nepalese classes.
This was before the 89?
Right.
Okay.
Nepalese classes. They have freedom to practice their own religion.
Which was Hinduism. Mostly Hinduism, and they could speak their language.
Right, and there were temples, priests, everything was normal.
Uh-huh.
But later on, the government tried to suppress, and they tried not to give Nepalese classes in the schools. You have to wear their Bhutanese dress, like Go and Kira, everywhere. They went as a one nation, one people.
Okay,
that was.
What about the religion? Could they continue?
Even religion, they didn't let you practice religion.
Okay,
so as I said, they went as a one nation, one people.
Okay,
so he has to go. Everything is a Buddhism.
All right. Now it started with like curtailing the religion and the language and the dress, but then it got kind of more, I don't know, violent, right? In some places.
I heard from my parents, like, there was a college called Swarabchi. That was only a college. I think now it's a university. There were a few Nepalese students who were getting higher educations. So I think they raised a voice against it first time. And even they had a chance to go with King to submit a paper regarding suppression about the governments in the lower place. But they were not heard by a government side.
But I heard that at some point the government or, I don't know, members of the Bhutanese regime, I guess, were actually burning Nepali villages, killing people. When did that start?
It came all the way on 89, 90, whenever people were demonstrating against a government that they want a democracy.
Okay.
And they want equality on the schools and everywhere.
And that's when
the violence started.
Okay. And then I think a lot of people, Lhotshampa people, fled to Nepal.
Right.
Thinking that
before they fled, the government used a military force to catch most of the youths, most of the men.
Protesters.
Right. Not only protesters, they went to every village and catch them. Even my dad.
Oh, they arrested?
Yeah, arrested. My dad stayed in jail for 18 months.
What was the charge? What did they accuse him of?
My parents were a leader of a village. Oh. Not only village, like my parents used to be a head of a... They used to say block, but one block covers 6-7 villages.
Okay.
So they thought like my dad was involved.
Oh.
To support.
Okay.
Against the government.
How was he treated in jail? Was he beaten or mistreated?
Bad torture. Even last night I was talking with my dad. Okay. Was really bad.
Torture.
A lot of people were dead in the jail.
Mm. Okay. So your population, the Lhotshampa people, many of them who survived, I guess, decided to leave the country. Maybe sometimes they were forced out of the country.
They were forced because while you were in jail, they told them, if you want to leave a country, you will be released.
Okay.
So that was the point.
And then where did they go? To Nepal?
They told you are from Nepal, you need to go to your own country.
Mm-hmm. But your people had been there for hundreds of years.
Right.
Generations.
Right.
And so I think Nepal really didn't want you guys either, right?
Well, I have to say that at least Nepal, they give you a place to stay. So I have to think on that too.
But that was a refugee camp, right?
Right.
Okay.
When you flee out of country, you have to go through India to get Nepal. So people, they try to stay in India, but it was not a suitable place for them.
Oh.
Probably the local didn't allow them to live there. So they have to go to Nepal.
Is the Nepali language similar to the Hindi language?
Similar.
Okay.
All right. So they have to go to Nepal, and they first, whenever the camp was established, it was in the bank of a river.
Near the border, I guess.
Near the border. It was Mai River. They called the name was a river. It was Mai. They lived in the river bank because of climate change, and it was so hard for Nepalese to survive. I heard almost every day they have a death rate of 16, 17 people.
Was this a United Nations refugee camp, or did it happen?
The first time, United Nations was not there. That's what I heard.
So the Nepali government set it up.
I can say the more local people they supported that time.
Did the local people welcome you guys, support you, or...
It was half and half. A lot of people were not welcoming. There were some people, good people too. So I don't want to blame everyone.
Yeah. But it wasn't from what I heard, a lot of the Lhotshampa people thought that, okay, Bhutan doesn't want us, but we're Nepali. If we go to Nepal, they'll welcome us. They'll give us, jobs. They'll give us a place to live. But it was not that easy.
It was not easy. It was not that expected like what we have third or what Lhotshampa third.
Yeah.
So at first, they established a camp there. It was not well organized. Every people was brought in the river bank. It was living there. It was not clean, not a good source of water, not a good source of food. They used to eat the rice, or they gave rice for a small.
Yeah.
That was the point.
I want to get into the details of the camp and how your family arrived there, but I think we need to take our first short break, and then we'll come back and pick up the story, okay?
Sure, sure.
You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1. We'll be right back.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. We're talking with Rajiv Gurung from Nepal, formerly of Bhutan. And you were talking about how life became increasingly difficult for ethnic Nepali people in Bhutan until many of you left. You voluntarily left or you were forced out. So, before we talk about that, I know you were very young when that happened. So let's talk about your childhood in Bhutan, the first few years of your life. I guess you said you were about seven when you left. So what was the name of the area that you were born in Bhutan? What was the name of your village or what area was it?
I was born in a village called Gopini. It's a Chirang district.
Okay. Was this a Lhot Champa Nepali village, or was it a mixed community?
Mostly all Lhot Champas.
Okay. And how many people were in your family? Did you have a large family?
Bhutanese Nepalese family are like mostly joint families, but on my side, my dad and my grandparents were there.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I get three siblings.
Okay. All right. So you did you attend school in those first few years before you left?
In Bhutan, when I was 5 years old, I went for a better school. I left my parents and went with my aunt.
At age five?
Yeah, my aunt were teacher.
Oh.
She used to be government teacher, so she was in the eastern part of Bhutan.
Okay.
So I went with her, stayed with her.
Okay.
And started my early education in different part of Bhutan.
Was that Nepali language school or a Bhutanese?
Bhutanese, it's a English school.
English?
Right. Bhutan has a really good education system.
Okay. So you learned English from an early age.
Right. Even Bhutan, whenever they didn't have enough teacher from their own local, mostly teacher in Bhutan were brought from Kerala, South India.
Oh, okay.
So every school has like almost like half of the teacher from India.
Really? Okay.
That's what they build up their education.
Okay. Were in your school, were there both Nepali and Bhutanese students?
When I started my early school, I was at the mostly Bhutanese side. So we were like few Nepalese, like one or two in the class.
Were there problems between the kids?
But that part of Bhutan was apart from Lhot Champa side. So even I didn't know what was the violence that time, because whatever I'm telling now was hard for my parents.
Mm.
But the time when he had violence, I was in different side of Bhutan.
Your childhood was okay?
My childhood was okay.
Okay, that's good. What was the school like? Was it very tough, strict, a lot of homework?
Asian schools.
Yeah.
Tough school.
Yeah. So you had to really respect the teachers.
Right. Even you see a teacher straight, you're going to bow your head and say,
interesting.
Respect, okay. Give respect to teacher.
Yeah, I taught English.
I think one way it was good because you learn how to respect.
Yeah.
We don't call name to your teacher.
How do you address
still,
the teacher?
Still, you say sir or madam.
Okay.
Even here, like if you see like foreign students or Asian, they're not going to call your name.
That's true. That's true. I taught English in Japan, and I taught in junior high school, and
even some part, they don't, you know, see you directly.
Right, they don't look you in the eye.
Yeah, exactly.
But my students had to, when I'd enter the classroom in Japan, they'd get up and all bow to me.
That's what we did.
Did, really?
That's what we did.
Uh-huh. And the first
but,
time?
But whenever I went to college, so I think like...
Here. College here, right?
Yeah, I did college here too and back home too. And then the student, whenever teacher enters, you need to stand up and greet.
Yeah. I mean, that's not such a bad thing. I think we could have more of that here. Other than school, what did you do as a kid? Did you play soccer or other kind of sports? What did kids do for fun in your little village there?
Now I look to our kids. They got a lot of things to do. We're back in the days, like, we
didn't have toys.
A lot of toys, yeah.
Was soccer popular there?
Soccer is more popular.
And you said your father was like a community leader?
My parents and even my grandparents, it was kind of hereditary.
Hereditary?
Yeah, from like, I can say third, my dad's grandparents, fourth generation, we were the head of bubble.
Are you talking about like royalty, like from the king's family, or just because of the politics it was hereditary?
Back in the day, it was not politics. It was like some respected people. Like here, it was not a metropolitan or not a city, but we used to be like administrative body in the village. But under us, we had seven or nine villages.
Okay. But sounds like your family might have had some kind of... I don't know if royal is the word, but
right.
You had some connection to the leadership.
Right,
of them.
Right. So anything happens in the village where they have a, well, in the village, they don't have a court. So if you have an issue, if you have a family problem, land issues, they have to come to our place.
Like, okay, that's interesting.
If you need anything, document, received, signed by administrative, you do it. Okay. Even in Dasai, the festival, you come to head up a village to get a tikka.
Okay. Now, you said when you were seven, your family finally left. That your father had been in prison for 18 months, and then after
months.
He was released, then...
He was compelled to
leave.
Flee out okay. of country.
Okay. And
so mostly Bhutanese family, whoever flew out of country... They say voluntary because they sign a paper. They sign a paper in front of...
With a gun to their
right,
head.
Right, head.
You're motioning a gun to
right.
their head. Yeah. Okay.
So they say yes. Even my dad told me, like, I was talking with my dad last night, like, how was the life in jail? So at first, when they were there, they didn't know, like, a lot of things. So they went, like, directly, were you involved in a political... Were you involved in demonstration? So you have to be obedient. So my dad said, I was not there. I was not politically involved. So they would keep torturing.
If you said yes and
yes.
stop?
So after three months, someone told that, like, just say yes. So they won't torture you. So later they figure out they say yes. So they don't let...
They let him go then?
Yeah. So you say yes. Finally, you tell yes. So you go here.
Okay. Well, now, talk about how, physically, how your family left the country then. I guess your father brought you back from your aunt's house and then you...
Oh, right. I was with my aunt that time. But my mom and my dad, they flew overnight because it was not secure at the daytime.
By foot? By truck? By bus?
By foot.
Where did you have to go?
I think it was halfway you took a foot and halfway you took a bus.
Okay.
And they all came to India, Bora, Bhutan. I think it's Sarbang in the Bhutan side and Mure is India side. They all were there. Like, there were a lot of Nepalese, they're filling out of country and they were there.
Did you know where you were going? Did you know that there was a camp there, or did you just want to flee, get out of the country?
No, I was not there that time. I was not there. I was still with aunt that time. But my dad but there were other people. They were
just traveling in a group.
Traveling group.
Did they know that there was a refugee camp or something waiting for them in Nepal, or are they just going, hoping something would?
Hoping.
Wow.
I heard they rent a big truck, and like two or three families used to rent a truck, say it's a truck, and they drove to Nepal.
So you had to basically leave everything behind.
Exactly.
People, and just flee. When did you join them then? You said you went, you were with
after,
your aunt.
I think, a couple of years.
Oh, okay. And
so my parents thought like they would be separated because I was in, they were there. So they called me, so I have to come.
And how did you get there?
My dad came to a border, so my aunt dropped me off at the border.
And you were 7 years old then?
Right. So when I came to Nepal, they were in a different place. There was like a small tent house.
It was literally like a tent.
Right.
Yeah, talk more about the camp. What it was, basically families lived in tents.
Right. Right. At first, they had a small tent, wherever people can make it and find a place, they used to sit there. It was not well sanitized, like not not good supply of water. Like, it was tough life. But once UN took over, I think they managed all the refugees camp.
Was it only Lhotshampa people there, or were there refugees from other countries too?
Not from other country, but there were like Bhutanese people too. Like people from Bhutan too.
Bhutanese, ethnic Bhutanese?
Exactly, yeah.
Were they maybe political refugees or something?
Right. Before Nepalese Lhotshampa issue happened, I heard in eastern part of Bhutan, they have several tribes too.
Minority tribes?
Right.
Oh.
They had an issue too. Okay. So they have to flee. Okay. We still have some Bhutanese people from Bhutan. They flee to refugee camp, and either they get married with Nepalese or Lhotshampa, and they're still here. We don't have anyone in St. Louis, but we have some.
Okay. How many years did you live in that camp?
Around 17 years.
17 years. Was there any kind of a school?
It was school there. Yeah. But we didn't have qualified teachers, but all teachers were volunteer teachers from our own community.
Did you have materials, books? Or?
Limited, but...
Did the United Nations later supply some things for that?
I think there was an agency called Caritas Nepal was taking care of the education side.
Okay.
It was not wow, I can say great, but it was okay. That's what build up was so far. So,
how many people you think were there when you were there?
There were 7 camps, 7 different locations. A total, I guess it was around 107,000, around. Or 15,000 that time. Our camp used to be on western side. We had around 22,000 people.
You mentioned the food. How was food provided?
Food was provided. They used to provide rice, lentils, oil, salt, sugar, basic necessity things.
And they would give you, you wouldn't go to a cafeteria. They'd give you a bag of rice and you'd have to figure out a way to cook it, right?
Every 15 days, like twice a month, you have a certain day that you go to collect
your ration.
It was all organized, believe me. It was tough time.
Not
it was
cooked
hot,
rice. You had to cook. So did you have to go out and find firewood and water to cook it in?
Right. So they used to provide the fuel called kerosene.
Oh.
You know, kerosene. Mm-hmm. But it was limited. Mm-hmm. But the firewood was tough to get it. The local, they didn't let you go out.
Mm-hmm. Basically, rice, lentils, and did you ever have meat or fruit?
No.
Never?
Never. There was vegetable too. Vegetables. But seasonal, like potatoes. And what was other? Cabbage, seasonal.
Yeah. What did kids do? Did kids play? Were there, like, kids play everywhere? Soccer?
Soccer was the main thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. You have some happy memories of that place too?
I got both sides, like happy. Well, I was talking with my parents, like, what should I tell? Should I tell the happy one or the hard one?
Tell both if you want.
Well, will your kids, like, you enjoy your time?
Yeah, it's for kids, it's a game. You can make anything right. A game.
So the time has gone, the past. So we're here now, thinking the memory. Mm-hmm. Even if it was a refugee camp, it was a good time.
Yeah, I like that too. I remember the good things more than the bad things.
So listener might think like, oh, you were in a refugee camp, but you were having a happy time. No.
Yeah.
We had a really hard time, but we enjoy it. So anything, I try to go with positive.
Good.
That's what I learned there.
Yeah.
The hardness in refugee camp, uh-huh. That makes me easier to struggle here in America.
Yeah, if you can survive a refugee camp, you can survive living in St. Louis. What was, were there bathrooms or showers or anything like that?
Bathrooms were...
Water?
Water supply. Later, they make a water supply. They give you... They have made a water tapes for like 50 household, one water tape.
Water tank?
Water. No, it was water supply. They call it tape, where
tape.
The water comes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So... they have a time, morning, 2 hours. At the midday, it was 2 hours, and evening, 2 hours. So you have to be in line to get water.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. Why don't we need to take another quick break here, but we're going to come back and talk about how you came to the United States. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. We'll be right back.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine, and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back. We're talking with Rajiv Gurung from Nepal, and we were talking about life in the refugee camp where you lived for 17 years, but then you came here with your family. How did that come about? Were there United States representatives coming to the camp interviewing people about coming here?
First, they took initiation interviewing for voluntary who wants to go third country settlement.
Now,
there are part of people, they want to go back to their own country too.
Was that an option to go back?
But they haven't took yet. They're still there in camp waiting for it.
Okay. Did your family want to come to the United States when you found that was an option?
All people who lived in camp, they had a hope to go back Bhutan no matter what.
Uh-huh.
They want to go to their own country. They want to stay their own home where they have built.
Okay. They didn't want to stay in Nepal either. They wanted to go back to Bhutan.
No, they want to go back to Bhutan.
Was life getting better for Lhot Shampa in Bhutan at that point?
No, but you want to go to your own country.
Okay. So you obviously didn't go back to your country. You came here.
So, but there was like multi-level bilateral talk.
Okay.
You could not come to a resolve. One time there was a Bhutanese government coming to camp to do a...
Bring people back?
Repartition back to... Okay. But it didn't work out. But Nepal has a problem too because it has a political issue. Like every time, 6 months, the government changes. So
okay.
I think one time they came and talked. Next time come, they had a different government. So that was a big...
Did some of those people in the camp, were they able to just... like go live in Kathmandu or just live in as normal Nepali people in the country, or do they all have to stay in the camp?
It was not easy. A lot of people, they used to live in camp, but in order to support financially to your family, you have to go work outside.
But
it was not legal to work you out, But somehow people manage it.
But were there some people that were able to just, I guess, get Nepali citizenship and just stay there and is, get out of the camp and just stay in Nepal or not?
No, we do have few people living outside the camp too, not majority.
But anyway, okay, do you remember, well, you were not that young when this happened. How did it come about that your family got refugee status to come here? I guess your dad interviewed with somebody in the camp?
No, I can tell that.
Okay.
There was a resettlement program came to a camp. They have a choice to put an application who wants to go. So it was not exactly where you're going to go. It was like seven countries offering for. Mostly they offer for a vulnerable group, disability, or who got like torture, stayed jail for a longer time, had a mental issue. So Australia was giving opportunity for them. Even my dad was in jail for a longer time, so they offered me for Australia.
Mm.
But somehow I choose to come to America.
Okay.
Making more opportunity.
Okay.
I didn't have big research on this, but it's still.
Okay. You had a choice of several countries.
My first priority would be Australia.
Okay.
But Australia didn't have much people. They have selected like 5,000 or 6,000 only at that time, but now they took more. And the U.S. have planned for 60,000, but we
that
have
many.
More than 6,000, right?
Okay, yeah. I remember we, you know, that was, I don't know, 15 years ago or something.
Right, back in 2007, 2008.
Yeah, that was, you know, the United States agreed to take it. You said 60,000 people from this community because
right.
they qualified under the definition of refugee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how long did it take between the time you decided you wanted to come to America and you came to America? How long was that process?
It took a whole year because they have to go strict all application process. First, they took a picture to identify this real refugee or not. So later on, it was like multi-layer interviewed. And yeah, it took a long time. And it was an organization called IOM.
IOM, yeah.
They set up an office in one of a city near to a camp. So every day, the bus used to come in refugee camps and take people for an interview.
Well, when did you come here then? What was it, in the summertime or the wintertime?
I came in May, starting.
Okay, that was not so bad weather-wise then. What were those first days like here?
The first day, it was May 8th, so I came in St. Louis. I didn't have a choice to come to St. Louis, but...
just chose America and they sent you to St. Louis.
Okay. Right. So before that, I haven't heard name St. Louis and Missouri too.
Okay.
So before I left, I came with me and one of my old family members in my house. So my parents were there in Nepal. So I print out the map of U.S. I put in my house. So I put the city location there. So anybody comes used to come in my house, and then my son is there. So make them easier. I came here at the night, and the next morning, it was like. So it was a long, long day.
I bet.
Long day. So it was like 6, 7 o'clock. I see a sun. Oh my God! Like back in Bhutan, like in Nepal. Like short day, so you don't see like for long sunlight. So also so confusing, like wow. So even in the late evening, like it was 9 o'clock, you see a sun.
Yeah, that was
sunlight. So it was so surprising to me.
Did you speak English when you came here? Well,
yes.
Okay, and you were resettled by the International Institute,
right?
Okay,
I was a second family through International.
Second Lochampa family,
right.
Wow.
I prefer to say Bhutanese Nepali than Lhotshampa.
Okay.
It's not something bad, but it's still more familiar word.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. You're fine.
So did you meet this other family that was here before you? And kind of
there was one family. One family came a month earlier.
Okay.
So I met them after 3 or 4 days.
What was it like?
But I didn't knew them when I first came here.
Didn't.
They were from different camp.
Right. But you kind of gravitated together right. and helped
Yeah, that's
other.
How Nepalese are. Whenever you yeah. see Nepal in the streets, they're like, hi, hello, they get Namaste. Connected now.
Yeah, well, it's great.
Very, it's,
you help each other that way. Mm-hmm. What was it, like, what were your thoughts? Did you think this is crazy, I want to go back, or was it?
That time, even you had a hard time, but I didn't have choice because I was only the one, like, helping out all families. So while I came, I had, like, with me, we had, like, two more families. So we were, like, four families all together. So I was the one helping out them for groceries, going here and there. So,
wow. What was your first job?
My first job was in kitchen. I thank them that they chose me to work there.
Working in a kitchen?
Right.
Okay.
I still remember that day when my friend, was a lady from here, American ladies. Her name is Maggie. She's been in Nepal a couple of times, so we are still a close friend. She used to work with the Muscom Ethiopian restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And she met with me since she were more close to Nepalese, and she used to speak Nepali too. So
I think your brother worked at Muscom, didn't he?
No, when I left, so I took my brother there.
Yeah.
So I stayed there. It was like after 2 weeks after I came here, so I started my job there.
What were some of the cultural differences you noticed here?
It's vast different, but I accept it.
Okay. You seem like the type of person that can and go anywhere and fit in.
I tried.
Okay, well now you are, I would call you a community leader. For one reason, you opened up a Nepali market, which is sort of like a community center.
Right.
So talk about how that came about.
First, when I started my first job in Muscom, I learned about the food of African culture and hospitality. And then second, I went to work with International Institute as a case manager, recently all new Nepalese and on other countries, refugees too, where I learned more culture, more people from different country, ethnicity, mm-hmm. and how to help people in different sectors. And it was summer job, so later, since it was only for temporary, and I went back to work with a Nepalese restaurant in Manchester. I was one and only
Arist.
I worked there for 1 year.
Oh.
So that time I learned all food, all uh-huh. the spices, and got into a food. So my plan was opening a restaurant or a store. And that time we had one international store called Jay, and there were multiple other stores from different country, but we didn't have any Nepalese store. So my plan was to introduce Nepalese in the town, and here I started.
You started a grocery store.
Yeah, a grocery store.
Right. How long did it take? All the paperwork and licenses and everything.
It was so tough because everything was new in this country because we haven't had any business background here. So it took almost like 3 or 4 months.
That's not too bad, really. How is business now?
Since then, every day is tough day, but we're learning. But compared to 10 years when I've studied, I have learned. And
you said you got customers, like,
right.
Iraqi
when I first
customers,
right. When
Nepalese.
I first started, we started with Nepalese-based customer. But since time changes, since new refugees coming in, we are going as per the refugees coming up. But now we have mostly Congolese, more Caribbeans, Afghanis. Mm-hmm. Recently, we have a lot of Indians customer too. So
well,
from every city.
How many Nepali Bhutanese came to St. Louis in that wave? How many families you think?
That time we had, I don't say a lot. We had around 900 to 1,200 Bhutanese, Nepalese.
People, not families.
People. Okay. In
and
St.
they're
Louis.
Not coming anymore. So it's,
no.
Okay, so we're not getting
no.
new ones.
No. So mostly there have been moving out Nepalese from St. Louis, either better opportunity as well as families, togetherness. They want to go with their family where they have in other cities too.
You've been talking a long time about opening a restaurant in addition to or inside your store. You never did that?
One time I had a like, small cafe, like doing a momo serving.
Yeah.
But it was so hard to manage because you need more people to work in. So what my family was managing everything at the time. Yeah.
You mentioned momo. That's like a traditional Nepali food. What is a momo?
A momo is a dumpling. I guess every country has kind of same, like Afghani has mantu.
Yeah.
Mostly Chinese and Thai, they have Nepali. But Nepalese, they call a momo.
Yeah.
And even Bhutan is popular momo.
Yeah. You can get these at Everest Cafe, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Everest Cafe, and we got a few Nepalese other restaurants, Namaste, Yeti, Heart, yeah. Bunch of restaurants now.
Oh, that's right.
So the main, the old one, they started from longer time, but there are a few other Himalayan Yeti, Himalayan Heart, and Namaste. That's
right. Mm-hmm. Are those camps in Nepal still open? Are people still there?
Most of them are closed. I was there after 15 years last January, end of January, I was there. There was like only two camps left.
Where do the people go? Do they go back to Bhutan or?
No, most of them, they came to U.S. or other countries like Canada.
Okay.
A few, and Australia, New Zealand, Norway.
Is it any better for Nepali people in Bhutan now? Is life okay or is it still dangerous or difficult?
It's kind of tough, but I think they keep saying they're okay there. But it's not easy. Like,
can they speak their language, practice their religion, like, or not?
You know, everything has changed now compared to back in the days. I haven't seen any strictness regarding the dress, but practicing religion would be something tough. But it's still under supervision.
Okay. What is the best and the worst thing about living in the United States?
A lot of things to talk.
I know. You've got 1 minute.
opportunity, education system, health system is the best. And if you're a determined hard worker, you can do everything, whatever you like to do in this country.
I know you're a very hard worker.
Thank you.
Anything?
And the only thing I'm worried about this country,
okay,
security.
Oh.
Gone war is too bad. I know a lot of country has a war, but a war situation and our system is totally different.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, you really have to be on your guard all the time these days. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron.
I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for coming in and talking with me. Your store is called
Gurung Bazaar.
People can visit you. You're Grand in Chippewa.
Grand in Chippewa.
And can you get frozen momos there? Or can you?
Yes, we do, sir.
Okay.
We sell frozen momos.
I recommend trying a momo sometime.
Not only Nepalese food, we do sell all Africans, Caribbeans, and Indian products.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1. Please join us next week.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.